It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Now you can speak. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello, good morning, everyone at Robin Hood Radio.
And everyone outside Robin Hood Radio. I have, before we get to the official questions, I think I learned this from you, but I could be totally wrong. But when you are walking an animal on the road, whose body is in the road, the animal or the human? Well, I shouldn't say in the road. I mean, on
that's
this,
a tricky question.
No, but what I mean is, do you walk on the out? Should the human walk on the outside of the animal, or should the human walk on the inside of the animal?
Well, the important thing, of course, is that you're supposed to walk.
I thought the animal was supposed, and you know, I am.
Yes, you should. You should try to, but some dogs won't. They'll only walk are trained to walk on your left side, and so ideally, yes, you would have a dog trained to walk on both sides. But are you supposed to walk with? You're supposed to walk against traffic. Is that correct?
That's neither here nor there. It's a small road. I'm just
okay. Yes, then exactly. Yes, ideally you would walk on the outside because you don't want the dog going into the road when a car comes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So you're sort of blocking with your body. That's what I try to do. But if you're on a dirt road and you're not having much traffic, then what difference? You know, it doesn't make that much difference. So if your dog's used to heeling on the left, which most dogs are, then that's okay, as long as you've got good control. But you don't want to walk down a road, you on the grass, your dog in the road with a, you know, one of those releasing leashes. I've forgotten what they're...
The retractables, right.
Actually. Retractable, yes. That's common sense.
Yeah, no, I just wondered what people were taught. I think I was taught to keep the dog on the inside, you know, closer to the side
it's
of the road.
Definitely safer to do that.
But I don't know whether that's a, you know, that was just a thing or, and that's why I asked.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a written rule, right. but what I can say, you know, from experience is that if you've got a dog, a car that goes by with two barking dogs with their heads out the window, and your dog is on the outside toward the road, then they're going to, many dogs will, you know, head toward that car, so it's dangerous to not have your body blocking that.
Right. That would be, again, so it's a judgment call. Let's go to...
Well, it is. If you're walking a 180-pound dog, you darn well better have a good a good control over them if that happens. Or they're going to push you into the road.
And then that's before the momentum and the force kick, the G-force kicks in, or the ergs, or whatever it's supposed to be.
Right.
All right, Ira in New York City. How do I cut my cat's claws when she hates having her claws touched? She's blind, if that makes a difference.
Oh, my goodness.
Just give it up. Sorry.
You're the vet. Yes. Take them to the groomer. But I have to say, though, that those harnesses, just to go back to the last thing you were talking about, that those harnesses give you really good control. So everybody these days is walking with the, you know, a lot of people walking their big dogs with harnesses that give you, that connect in the front, right in front of the chest, and they give you pretty good control of your dog. So cutting cat's claws, we do this all day, every day, and it's a great question because some people, you know, because some cats especially, become so stressed by getting in the car to go somewhere to have those claws cut that people want to learn how to do this at home. With a cat who's blind, of course, most cats are who are blind do absolutely fine. They hardly need their sight, but it would make them more nervous with something like that happening. So wrapping them in a towel or a blanket is the key. We do that. It helps to calm them a little bit, makes them feel secure. But I would definitely say that you need to have two people. So it's difficult enough for us to do it by ourselves, who do it every single day. But if you're going to do it at home and you're only clipping claws, you know, every two or three weeks, then having an extra person is super helpful. And so holding, wrapping the kitty all the way up so that all four legs are in the towel or the blanket. And then what we do is we pull out, you know, someone holds the kitty and tight to your body so that they feel secure. And then you pull out one leg at a time and do it that way.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, it works really well. Even with cats who are not so easy to handle, that's how we pretty much do it. And we might have to unwrap them for the front legs. If they're very unhappy and trying to bite, we'll unwrap the front legs in a different way, sort of have to half unwrap the cat.
So it's hard to get the cat mummy.
Yes, but you don't want to put your hand in front of that mouth.
That's true.
With the front feet. Yeah,
right.
Unless
you've... And of course, if you going back to our earlier conversation, if you are if you've got some sort of visual dyslexia, as I do, that can be doubly traumatized. I happen to be lucky enough to have a cat who likes his boyacures because he's not a man.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have sort of spa. We have spa moments.
Well, you've probably been doing that with him forever, and he probably gets treats, I would guess, associated with that.
Okay. Say that again?
Does he get treats associated with that time?
No, not really.
No? Okay. But it's special bonding time.
Yeah, it is just, it's just something that he's never objected. You know, it's just weird. He's never objected to it. Every so often he will the clippers have to be sharp. Every so often he will just like indicate his objection and try to bite a little bit, but it's never stressed him out.
Wonderful. And you've probably done that since he was a baby.
So that's just my luck. But I've got other the cats at the station, you know, if you go near them they'll be like, "Yeah, sorry, later."
Yeah, it's something to learn when they're babies and something that you can practice when they're little, too. It's easier to restrain them a bit. You can have someone distract them with petting on top of the head and treats, too, while you're doing it.
Yes, treats.
And once they're accustomed to it, and it's difficult, you know, with cats, it's a lot easier to clip their nails without causing any pain.
Yeah.
So if you start it when they're young, they get used to it. Everything's fine. They're not nervous about it.
And which raises an interesting thing. If you approach them nervously, it's like if they're vibing off you, that just makes it even worse.
Sure, and that's why it's difficult at times to do things at home.
Right.
Because people get a little bit worked up about it.
And so this reminds me of the late lamented, beloved Natasha, who was with us for just hundreds of years, it would seem like. But she, whenever she thought that she might be going to the vet, you know, maybe 3 weeks from then, she would start. Once the carrier came down, she was gone.
Yeah.
Prior
right.
to that. So that is something that. Are there mobile? I wonder if there are dog walkers or cat sitters or whatever that would include cat clipping as their, nail clipping as one of their services.
Oh, I think so. You know, there are pets who can't, who get really worked up at the vets. And I know that there are people who, you know, groomers. I don't know if there's someone who come to your house, but you have to make special friends with a veterinary technician.
Yes, that's...
and tip her about, you know, whatever, 15 or 15 bucks to drive by your house on the way home and clip the toenails.
Very clever.
Yeah.
I think that's a good... I'm seeing a personnel business here. All right, Lynn and Winston, you're a vet, so you must notice other people's pets all the time outside of your work environment. Have you ever come up with a diplomatic way to tell somebody their dog is too fat? I have a friend who became a first-time dog owner when her fiancé died, and I noticed that her 11-year-old Doberman is getting pretty dang hefty, mostly because she's not big on walking, so he doesn't get much either. He doesn't get much walking. She's a pretty defensive person, so if I said anything, it would need to be very tactful, which isn't my best sport. I figured you'd be a pro. On the other hand, maybe it's not a big deal since the dog is already 11 and very happy with his life.
It is a big deal. At 11 years old, to be overweight is very difficult and will, in fact, shorten the dog's life in most cases. because of mobility issues. So I would have to say that I make a policy not to comment on dogs' weight when I'm not when I am outside my work, especially my family's dogs. But I think that it's okay for me to greet people's dogs, but I don't talk about their weight when I'm not at work. I think when I'm at work and I'm asked to do, people bring me their pets and I'm asked to do a physical exam, it is my responsibility to address their weight because it's so important to their health and longevity. And I do, and I think that starting with, most people, number one, know that their pet's overweight. The vast majority, 90-something percent, know that their pet's overweight. And so you can ask questions like, is Sam having any trouble getting around or going on walks? Or if you see him having trouble getting up, you can say, oh, he's starting to have some trouble getting up. Do you think he has arthritis? And you broach the subject in that way. Is he able to jump in the car still? So broach the subject with those kinds of questions, and your friend might start talking about his arthritis or his difficulty, etc. And you could say something like, I'm worried about his joints because of the extra weight that he's carrying around. You could say, has your veterinarian talked to you about weight? Does your vet think that that his weight has anything to do with his soreness? Those types of questions are non-threatening for most people.
Yeah.
And you get the conversation rolling. And even if they completely seem to have their head in the sand, and so they'll say, no, my vet says he's perfectly normal weight, then you've at least gotten them to think about it. You know, you think that you haven't gotten anywhere, but they will be thinking about it. Whether that'll help or not, it's hard to say.
And there's another thing that you can do. I, of course, once was told, it was just classic. A very strict woman looked at me and she said, that dog's too fat. You've just got to be kidding. And that was my first experience putting a dog on a diet. But
But the veterinarian can get away with that. I mean, I usually start out with saying something about he doesn't miss a meal. Is his appetite good? I don't think he misses a meal. But, you know, you have to be careful because people are really connected with their pets.
And they can get easily offended. So
yes.
What I was going to say is you can, if you are concerned, and in this case with this question, I would say to Lynn, and this is just as a civilian who has had dogs who were too big and who was really amazed and blah, blah, blah. I would just say, hey, when you next take whatever the dog, I don't know what the dog's name is. When you next take his...
I made up a name.
Yeah, okay. When is Sam going to the vet? Because you should ask Sam about, you should ask the vet whether Sam, you know, has any arthritis. You just give a side thing completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then
good idea.
Make that the vet's problem. Because anybody that is pretty dang hefty is going to be absolutely obvious. And just because of advertising and everything, you don't see, you know, the dog and pet food and et cetera ads are much better about dogs' weights than they have been. But there is, in human medicine, what I'm really struck by, if there are digestive issues or whatever, instead of saying check your diet, it's check with your doctor about what you can take.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between human medicine and animal medicine is there is a lot of focus on diet and what you can do and how much. And that's really good, and it ends up being good for humans too. So
That's
I just wanted to throw that into the mix, because if you can get the conversation going about your dog and what your dog should be eating, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump to perhaps what you should be eating as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there are people who don't make the connection between what they feed and their weight. I do get that occasionally, that I don't feed him too much. I don't know why he's overweight. But, you know, common sense will tell you that the only way he can gain weight is through food, so you are feeding him too much or allowing him to eat too much. So, or the neighbors are feeding him too much.
Right, but some people grew up also on Snoopy's supper dish being totally full.
Oh, sure.
You know,
So there's a whole, right.
I know I had that with my dad. It was just impossible. And as he passed, as the dog feeding went on to other people, when I said, well, no, actually, he should be eating a quarter of that, maybe. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? It's so fun to watch them eat.
I know. It really is. It's so gratifying.
It is.
They love to eat.
Especially when they're begging from you, and dogs are very good about learning how to get that
extra bit.
They do, and they just use their eyes.
They do, and Carly's particularly just like, I'm starving.
Every time I walk in the kitchen, I get followed because the cookie jar is in the kitchen.
It might be, and it could break, and they could all explode and fall on the floor. And you can see that, you know, it's just in case, or if they hear a rustle. So, there is that whole thing. Now, speaking of cookies, Juliana in Hillsdale, my cousin gives her Labradoodle a lot of milk bones. Well, I think it's a lot, like several handfuls throughout the day. Is there such a thing as too much of those?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. There's a common thing of too much of those. So these are made, these milk bone type things, or milk bones themselves, are made for an occasional treat. And so, you know, one a day or a half twice a day, depending on the size of the dog, is appropriate. Maybe two if you've got a young, super active dog. But to give them in piles is really contraindicated. They are super high calorie usually, and they're not complete and balanced food. So it would be like you're coming in every time you go outside and you come back in the house, you eat a cookie. And if you're doing that six times a day, you end up with six cookies or six of those little tiny Milky Way bars every day. And that's the equivalent in calories. So not a good thing. Those types of things, if they're very hard and your dog actually chews them with the back teeth, might help a little bit with plaque, but they really aren't making that much difference. And many dogs will do one chew or two chews and swallow it. Yeah. So if you're going to give treats, what you need to do is get in the mindset of limiting the treats. This is how many. Look at your calories. Find out from your veterinarian how many calories, or you can find out online, about how many calories your dog should be ingesting in a day. And then you put those, if you have trouble with it, you put those in a bowl, and that's it for the day. Put some carrots. You can do, sliced carrot sticks for treats. You could do blueberries. Wash them really well. Don't give your dog unwashed blueberries that you wouldn't eat. But they do like the blueberries that become wrinkled up and shriveled up. Those are really sweet. So those are fine if you're not going to eat them anymore. You know, give them to your dog. Give them some raspberries, different sweet things for a treat. But just a little bit, because it is a treat. It's not a meal.
Right. And that's the key. Milk bones have been advertised for so long, though, that it's really hard to brainwash people.
Yeah, and a couple of milk bones, you know, a day for a 50-pound dog, if they're the small ones, always buy the small ones.
Not the big ones, because they
always
come small,
buy the small
medium
ones.
And large, right.
Yeah.
And then you can also break them in half. You want to give your dog a treat four times a day? Fine. But break when they come in from their walk or whatever, but break it in half. And this is all learned by experience. None of this is, this is all learned by experience.
And Paul Newman's makes these great all-natural treats that are little heart shapes that they have a crease down the middle for breaking, I think. So it works out really well. And they're smaller than a milk bone, and they're crunchy, and dogs love them. They come in a few different flavors. So you can find something like that that's a little healthier.
Right. And I will just say the thing that got me many years ago is, many years ago, is a vet who said, "So tell me, do you remember how Pepperidge Farm, yummy, yummy Pepperidge Farm cookies, Milano's, for example, would come in a little, they came in that container, they were stacked up, right? There were a couple of layers.
Yeah.
So you could work your way down.
Uh-huh.
vet basically said, so how many layers of Milano cookies would you eat? And I was like,
yeah, those little bags yep. are dangerous because I could probably eat the whole bag in one sitting.
Easy. Yeah. So, and it was just that connected in a way that other things perhaps didn't.
Yes.
All right, I inherited a two-door, this is Brian in Kingston, I inherited a two-door coupe that's hard for anyone to get into the back seat of, and that includes my dog, a Jack Russell French Bulldog Corgi mix. In order to get back there, she has to do something off the back of the driver's seat. It makes me nervous every time because I worry that if she gets it wrong, she could hurt that leg. On the other hand, if I pick her up and put her on the back seat, she thrashes insanely and often wriggles out of my grasp. To my mind, that seems even more likely to cause an accidental leg injury. Can you weigh in, please?
So I'm picturing the car, so usually those seats go forward. So I guess if I...
I guess you're trying to put the on the back sort of thing?
Well, what I would do is, if you're not usually carrying a person with you, another person with you, so you're the sole driver of the car, you usually travel alone, is to just put your passenger seat all the way forward. Then you have a little space when you open the door. There's a little space for your dog to jump on the floor, but you don't want to, but you need to control that. So, and this is one of the most important things you can teach your dog right from day one, is to wait. They need to wait or stay, I use the word wait, when you open the door. I trained my dogs to the back door of the house. So they need to sit and wait. You open the door a tiny bit. Once they go for the door, you close the door. And you do that repeatedly. Usually takes about 6 times until they understand that they need to stay seated in order for the door to open. Don't ever let them run through the door. You open the door all the way, finally, and you say free or go or okay or whatever your command is, and then they run out the door like maniacs. That's how you teach them how to wait. And that wait command is so useful in every aspect of life. And that's one place where it would be. You need to teach that dog really well to wait. Have them sit and tell them wait while you're getting the car ready. You open the door. You push the seat's already forward. You flop the seat forward, the back of the seat forward. And then what we do when we're helping a dog who is a little bit wobbly or we're afraid they're going to hurt themselves is one hand on the collar and the other hand on the back end. You could even go between the hind legs, and that way you've got some control. And so, train your dog, put the hand on the collar, other hand on the bum, and then you can say free, or with my dogs, I say up, up. And then you can guide them, this little dog, I'm assuming it's a fairly little dog, for the jump right into the floor of the car.
Right.
Once they're on the floor, they should be able to, he or she should be able to jump right up on the seat and not be doing too much crazy stuff.
Yeah. All right. It's funny. There's a theme to this show, and that is basically how you manage your, it's the physical relationship between you and your dog. And
yeah,
there's not an app for that.
No, and when you get something that is crazy and you say, you know what, I can't do this anymore, you need to take a step back, look at the process, and understand, if there's super tricky things like the recall, like cum, there's something you have to work on, but a training tool like wait is very, in my hands, is pretty simple. They know they have to wait or that door's going to close. Unfortunately, it might close on their head, You have to be careful about that. But that command is usually something that's really pretty easily learned and is so helpful in those types of situations so that you're not in danger and your dog's not in danger.
All right, one last quick question. I'm helping some friends by stopping by and feeding their cats. They live in a shabby low-rent apartment building in Brooklyn, and they have an ant problem. Those teeny tiny house ants. The ants go right for the bowls of wet food I'm supposed to leave out for the cats and swarm all over the food. My thought, and maybe good morning everyone, maybe I'm being totally paranoid, is that someone might be putting out ant poison in a crappy apartment complex, and then the cats run the risk of eating those ants. So I've been reluctant to leave the cats any wet food. Am I being ridiculous?
No, I don't think you're being ridiculous. I think that... The ant food is not very toxic. they'd have to eat quite a bit. They have to eat, you know, several of those, of the whole ant traps. So eating ants that have a little bit of that in them probably is not going to be more than irritating to the gut. However, probably not a great idea to be feeding ants. I don't know what else they might be carrying, and it's kind of a disgusting thought.
Right.
So, you know, the idea would be, I think, to feed as much food, feed as much of the canned food in a different area where the ants aren't used to being, where the cats will eat it while you're waiting. So most cats, especially if mom and dad aren't home, they're going to come running when they know you're going to feed them, and so just put enough in there that they can eat while you wait for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then, you know, presumably there may be some dry food that's left out, although it doesn't have to be if you're coming twice a day to feed. But I wouldn't, depending on the type of ants, they're going to be crawling all over the cat's face, and it's just really not a, maybe in their fur, not a wholesome thought.
And on that note, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm not sure that was helpful at all, but
oh no, I think it was. The answer is no. And I know someone who had a similar problem, and what they did is they just cleaned the person's apartment. But
this time of year, those ants are yeah. But it depends on where you feed them. So you've got to keep right. The problem is that ant traps don't work.
Right.
They're not traps, but they're the ant bait. Doesn't yep. work if you've got enough crumbs on the counter. They're going to choose the crumbs on the counter and on the floor rather than the
ant. Been around for that long for a reason. No fools they.
Exactly.
Thank
Have
you.
A good day.
You too. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com on the web.